It is great seeing you here tonight. I was telling my wife when we pulled up, I said, I honestly think that people probably on Wednesday night see our parking lot and think, huh, Sunday morning there'll be like two cars out here. And everybody parks back here. On Wednesday night, everybody parks out here. Nobody parks back there. I don't care where you park, but I just thought it was pretty funny because we came in actually looking for a parking space, which you don't usually have to do something like that. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Y'all stand to your feet out of respect for the reading of the Word of God. We have a helpful portion here, as usual. I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 just as a compendium there so we can know kind of what's happening. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity. Father, again we come to you in prayer. Prayer being not a side issue or just some protocol in the church, but our very lifeline to know that without the aid of the Spirit, the preaching of Thy Word would fall flat. That conviction would not be found. Lord, I don't ever want to be guilty of manipulating people into feelings that are not genuine, but that the Spirit Himself might deal in men's hearts through the preaching of the Word as promised in the Old Testament, that would not return void, but it would accomplish that which it was sent to do. So I pray this would be a help to all of us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. And you may be seated. Verse 2 is our text. Treat the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity. We dealt with the elder women as mothers two weeks ago. And now we're looking at the younger as sisters. This is such a helpful verse for the minister. A young minister in particular, like Timothy, but old ministers alike, we all need this kind of admonition. So my first point is that Paul is instructing the minister at Ephesus to treat the younger women as sisters. Now I can just stop right there, as I think it was Albert Barnes that made the statement, these are so painfully obvious that they don't need a lot of exposition. But I've already started working on the widow sermons, and being sick this past week gave me opportunity to kind of just stay still and focus, and I probably am going to have 3 or 4 sermons just on the widows alone. So I don't know that Albert Barnes was right. Maybe it takes that many for me to understand it. But within God's family, men and women ought to display a tender affection toward one another, the kind of fondness that a brother ought to have for a younger sister. There ought to be a protection mode built into our pattern of thought, that we would try to protect the younger, that we would not want something to happen to them. When brothers buy into the idea that they are little offshoots of the father as far as protectors to the family, it can kind of be cute sometimes. It has to be usually guarded, and you have to rein them in sometimes. But little brothers don't want people messing with their sisters at a certain point. Now, there's a certain point they don't care anything about their sister. She's just that dumb old girl living at home. But something happens to a lot of young men at a certain age. They realize part of my duty is to watch out for these little girls. They're my responsibility too. If I'm with them and there's not a parent around and there's no authority around to guard them, the younger brothers ought to take it in their mindset that it's my job to protect my sister. And so they ought to put themselves into that mindset. As well, not only a protector, but there ought to be a vision mode, a looking forward mode that causes us to consider the future of the young woman as we make decisions and render counsel toward her and her family. We ought to be very careful in the advice that we give to the family concerning a child. I have people ask me many times, they'll ask me things about, thinking about this, my daughter going and helping this family, or I was thinking about my daughter going and maybe, you know, working for this lady, and I was thinking about my daughter going and doing this, and they'll ask questions like that, It should be never a light matter for the pastor to go, oh, what does it don't matter to me? No, my daughter, no big deal. Just send her on, do whatever you want. Because if I'm to regard her as a sister, then I need to be protecting her like a sister. I need to be thinking in advance. What could be the ramifications of making this decision? We had a family one time that asked my opinion about a daughter who could knock a ball over a fence a long way. And they said, man, she's really good. What do you think we ought to do? And I said, with what? Do you think we ought to keep her in that sport because she's so good? And I said, well, just keep in mind if she's as good as you say she is, this particular sport doesn't care. They'll play their tournaments on Sunday. I said, they'll play right through the Lord's Day. I said, you'll be out of town. You'll have to take off from work. Is she so good that she's going to be a professional softball player? I think she could be. I said, well, you need to be extremely careful then. I said, it'd be my recommendation, no. But they didn't listen to me, of course. They went ahead and they did exactly what I was fearing. And they pushed and pushed and pushed. And sure enough, they were gone for weekends at a time. The next thing you know, they left the church. And they left the church because she got a scholarship to a particular college somewhere. And things went downhill after that. Now, I can't predict the future. I can't look into a glass ball and say, eh, there's what's going to happen. I can't see that. But I can see common pitfalls. And say to you, here's the common pitfalls to decisions like this or that. And we need to be wise in rendering counsel with that in mind. I'm sure there's some young ladies that have knocked a ball over a fence and did well and never got into problems and never had issues at all. But there are common pitfalls to these things. Everyone wants their sister protected and to have a bright future. So we want to plan and help in that area with the young women in this church. Now, pastors ought to consider the fact that this young girl will also one day be interested in a man. That happens. Some of you young girls right now are like, I'm not going to be interested in no guy. And some of you young girls are like, yeah, I'm already interested in a young guy. And maybe you'll get over that because he's probably a goofball. And you'll discover that later. And you're sitting there thinking, I hope he's not a goofball. I hope Yerzeki's not either. I hope he's awesome. He has skills and he's going to protect you and he's going to take care of you and do all those wonderful things. That's our prayer for any young girl that has her eyes set on a fellow. But one thing that pastors need to be doing is helping the families direct these girls to certain skills that can only be properly developed in a home setting. So, this means that as ministers, we need to encourage mothers and fathers to prepare daughters for their future ministry as wives and mothers. Because there is a higher percentage chance your daughter is going to be a wife and a mother than a professional softball star. But yet more money and time is usually spent on training a girl in something that will probably never come to pass than on the thing that we can almost guarantee will come to pass. It doesn't in all cases. Some girls never get married. Some girls never have children. That happens. And we know that. But many, many less end up as a professional whatever. So the main training needs to be the thought that, hey, you know what? One day you're going to manage a household. You're probably going to manage a household. What are the ways that we can help you manage a household? Everything from getting their own bank account to learning how to balance checkbooks to learning how to manage calendars within the home, to manage maybe even siblings' work schedules, maybe even running a little business of their own so that they can figure out how to manage and take care of things. All of these things are going to be so critical in the life of this young lady. Skill sets that will make them invaluable to a husband, such as math skills, management skills, anything that you might not consider at first glance to be important. Because moms wear many, many hats. Many hats. They are logistics directors. They have to make sure this one gets to this location on time. They have to make sure that this schedule is working with this schedule. They have to make sure that if this child is going to be involved in this, they have to have this particular skill. There's all sorts of management skills involved in managing a home. So you see, the young women will one day be older women. I think that's something we forget. One day, these very young girls in here are going to be, Lord willing, very old women. And if you don't believe it, just look at me. I was a very young boy one time. And now I'm an aging man. Older. I'm 53 years old. I hope I live long as my dad. But I hope I'm also in at least as good a condition as he's in. But you don't think about that when you're 10 and 12 and 14 and 16. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself an older woman with no training and no skills and no abilities. And you don't want to be there. Pastors, I believe, are on the front line for exhorting mothers and fathers in the training of their daughters and sons to reach every potential that they need to be productive in the kingdom of God. Whatever that may look like. So we have to be open to ideas and even ideals that may make them better in that. So, while Timothy is encouraged to treat the younger as sisters with protection, with training, with guidance, with counsel, all of these things, there is a warning added to this verse. There's a warning added here. Immediately, it's not like he tells you all these things and then later on mentions it, but he says this, with all purity. With all purity. The younger as sisters with all purity. Now, as close a relationship between siblings may be, there cannot be anything improper about that relationship. Here, I believe that the concern, frankly, is a sexual concern. A minister cannot compromise his commitment to Christ by having an inappropriate relationship with one of the young ladies in the church. Chastity is a part of a minister's sacred trust to the congregation. Now, I want you to take note here. Given the language that is used, the terminology that the Apostle Paul is using here, one might almost say, that adultery or fornication among Christians in that setting is tantamount to incest. That's how serious it would be looked at. This is my sister, this is my mother, this is my father. Conduct your relationship with purity with them. So it would not be a light admonition, but a very serious admonition. If she's to be treated as a sister, if the older ladies are to be treated as mothers, a sexual relation between them and the minister outside of the bounds of marriage would be completely inappropriate. Paul is wanting this young minister's work to be uncompromised. So I might say, I don't even know why Paul needed to mention with all purity. That should just be expected. But what is expected and not stated is often neglected. If you don't believe it, just manage a group of people and don't state the obvious. Okay, moms and dads, don't state the obvious when you tell your children to do something tomorrow. And they will not do the obvious. It's amazing. Because we see that in every situation. I mean, my children growing up, now I have the word boys in my household, and I'm thinking it's universal across the globe for children You do not take the trash out until you have managed to balance a Coke bottle on top of a pyramid of trash in the top of the can. Is that universal among children? Let me see your hands. Nobody wants to admit it. I know it's true because I did it. Walk up to the trash can and I'd go ahead and set something on the trash can. I mean, this is how we function. It's what we do. And if we think that you don't need to state the obvious, then we're fools. If the trash can's full, guess what you do? Take the trash out. What's full, Mom? You. My wrath. That's what's full. So, Paul very obviously states something, doesn't he? What does he say? He says, you treat these younger as sisters with all purity. You make sure there is purity in the relationship with them. Now remember, not all the women in Ephesus were these discreet, lovely, precious little ladies. They weren't all. I mean, we go down to verses 11. It says, but the younger widows refuse. These girls that become widows early in life, don't take them into the church to care for them. That's not what you do. He says, these younger ladies that are widows, he said, you have this idea, oh, her husband died, we need to bring her in and start supporting her so she doesn't have to do anything and she can just sit there and live on the benefit and blessings of the church. That's what we ought to do. Paul says, no, the younger widows refuse. Don't give them that liberty. But when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry. In other words, after there's been this investment and this time and this preparation, this setting up, they will go ahead and marry. Having damnation, why? Because they cast off their first faith. A woman commits herself to the care of the church, and she says, I'm going to submit myself to the church. Apparently, and everything I can read in church history, the early church fathers, there was a literal selling out of these widows to the church to minister, to become literally possessions of the church, to be used for the glory of God, to care, to minister, to do amazing things in the church as far as ministry was concerned. And with all, they learned to be idle, wandering about from house to house. That's called Facebook. Not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. There it is. He's very plain about it. He said, you got these young widows. He said, and the thing is, he said, their first tendency is, oh, let's bring them in and let's make sure they're all taken care of and they don't need a thing and they can just sit here and do nothing. He says, no, they need to go ahead and get married. If they won't do that, they will become busybodies. I've seen young widows not marry, and I've seen some, and they don't become any problems. And I rejoice in that and thank God for it. I also see some widows that end up becoming self-proclaimed counselors. As quick as their husband dies, they all of a sudden they're granted some supernatural wisdom. And they become unbelievable counselors to all the other women in the world because their marriage apparently was perfect after he's dead, which is true. After he dies, their marriage transforms into perfection. He never did wrong. It was an amazing marriage, and this is how he instructed us and guided us, and I can tell you exactly how it needs to be done. And that's exactly what Paul's warning about here, is all sorts of directions that this can go. A woman can go into a lewd direction. She could end up going into an overkill, domineering position. So all sorts of things can happen to you. So the answer is, let her marry so she can be under a head that can guide her, protect her, and help her to be everything for the kingdom of God that she ought to be. So Paul is wanting the work of a minister to be uncompromised by how he treats the women. Now, one good way for a minister to preserve his purity is to take the advice of a preacher by the name of James Montgomery Boyce. He's dead now. He pastored in Boston for years, and this is what he said. He had four key points that he recommended. And he said, I minister to women in this manner. He said, I never have private meetings with ladies in the church. I just don't do it. Ladies says, hey, can we meet privately and talk? He said, no. Can't do that. I had a lady tell me one time, you don't trust me. I said, that's correct. I don't trust you, and you shouldn't trust me. There is some disconnect in people's mind. The pastor is not human. He doesn't have emotions, he doesn't have feelings, he doesn't have temptations, he doesn't have lust. Have you not noticed that preachers fall like flies today in the ministry? They're as human as anybody else. So he said, I never have private meeting with ladies in the church. Secondly, I never visit their homes alone. Didn't show up at a lady's house, husband's at work. We dealt with a minister, a preacher, and their church, and had to work through some real sticky issues. This pastor, he is older than me. He's in his 60s. He would go by visiting the young ladies when their husbands were at work, wanting to counsel them. One of them, you know, her husband came before the men and said, look, the preacher came by the house and wanted to take my wife away and take her somewhere. Let's run away together, he said to her. He said, this can't happen. And the preacher said, I'll try not to say things like that. I was just kidding around. I can't imagine that. That's foreign to my mind to think that I would go visit a young lady whose husband's at work and say, hey, let's me and you run off together while your husband's gone. I don't even find humor in that. But obviously, he claims that's what his motive was to be a funny guy. He went on to say, he said, so I never have a private meeting. I never visit them in their homes alone. If I counsel them, it is in a room with a window and someone close by. That's at least somewhat good. So he said this. He said, my rule of thumb is I will not meet alone with any woman unless she is my wife, my sister, my daughter, or old enough to be my mother. I like that. I'm running out of people old enough to be my mother in this church. So there's only a few of you left in this world. But I think Mr. Boyce had the right idea. Now I know Paul is writing under the direct influence of the Holy Spirit as he penned this letter to Timothy, and he shows a deep understanding of the nature of man in this as well, which of course is also part of the guidance of the Spirit, because this is being written by inspiration. The Apostle Paul is an experienced older man in these matters as well. There is a danger that besets the minister, and particularly young ministers. We cannot be foolish to think that the people we minister to would not become close and familiar to us. I think of the hours that I've spent over the years with some of the congregants here, men and women alike. I think of fond memories and affections that we share in common over the years. You discover these things. And I know that there are some that I am closer to than others, just by default and by the way that time has worked things out, as well as personalities. It is inevitable, considering we're going to be at 19 years this month, or next month, November. When is it? November, right? At the church, 19 years. Hopefully I'm close to somebody. With that said, there has to be an extra particular care in my handling of the opposite sex. Now sadly, in today's society, even counseling with the same sex becomes a dilemma, as some have chosen to pervert the natural desire of men towards women, and there are accusations of abuse of all kinds that are coming out now. So meeting even with young men or children, I don't want to meet alone with them. Just as a protection, a stopgap of what could be said or might be said. Being in the counseling ministry, people tend to pour out many, many private matters into the ears of their ministers. And we have to be particularly vigilant to keep our bearings. And often there are matters, including sexual matters, that end up being discussed. would love for my brain to work like a file cabinet. When somebody tells me some fact, I can say, okay, that needs to go here and this and that needs, I put this in this file cabinet, put this over here, and I'll reference it as I need it. But that's not how the human brain works. We're given subtle ideas and hints that form graphic pictures and images in our minds sometimes. And so the minister has to be extremely vigilant to keep his bearings. That's why discretion is absolutely important. And also, having a wife is important when these kind of matters arise. To imagine that pastors never have a lust issue, for example, or a pastor is never tempted, is to make us something more than mere men. And we're just mere men. I would like to think we have some extra measure of grace that we're never tempted to do anything wrong. But that's simply not true. So greater care and stronger warnings must be put to use by the minister of the gospel to protect himself, to remain above reproach with the ladies in the congregation, because the devil would love to have it his way. To disrupt the congregation, to tear them apart with a scandal in the pulpit. That would just be a great story. It would just be something to do such irreparable damage. It was Albert Barnes that made this statement, and I think is a really good, so I put the whole thing down here, so just bear with me as I read it. He said, "The scandal to which he might be exposed, if in the performance of necessary duties of his office, there should be the slightest departure from purity and propriety, this could be disastrous." So if he departs in any way from trying to keep purity and propriety before him, it could end up being disastrous. Now, Herman Nixon, pastor in Nashville, Tennessee, pastored in different places in Tennessee for years and years and years. Good old fellow, man. I really loved him to death. His first advice to me when I was being ordained in the ministry, he said, my advice to you is, he said, never take your pants off in the ministry. He said, that way you're never going to have a problem. Just keep your pants on. He said, preachers have lost their families in ministry and ruined lives because of that one little rule that they broke. I thought, well, how obvious is that? Well, not so obvious. You're going to see the statistics in a minute as to what I'm talking about and the shame that it can bring. But Herman Nixon went to visit a lady one time, and he's trying to have all propriety in doing this. She was a lady whose husband had left her, and she was in need of ministry, and they were going to take her some groceries by. And he and his wife pulled up to their house. The car pulled up and stopped in front of some shrubs. His wife was in the car with him. He gets out and walks up, and there's an open gap between the shrubs and the carport that he walks through. The next door neighbor sees him walk through and goes to the front door. She comes to the carport and says, do you want to come in, preacher? He says, no, I've got my wife in the car. And she's sitting right there. She can see everything's going on. We're going to bring you these groceries by and let you know we're going to be praying for you, and you need to come back to church Sunday and want to meet with you and see if there's anything more we can do. She goes, okay. And the phone rang. He said, could you wait just a minute? He goes, sure. She gets on the phone and says, yep, 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 yep. And he stands there and waits and waits and waits and waits. About 10, 15 minutes goes by. And she finally comes back. I am so sorry. That was so important. That was my mother, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, okay, just want to know. And he prayed with her. And then he comes down, gets in the car, and leaves. Well, Miss Nosy Neighbor, right here beside, saw him pass from the shrubs into the carport. And she set her stopwatch. Tick, 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 tick. But she didn't say anything to her neighbor. She didn't say anything to the preacher. She got on the phone and began to tell her neighbors and other friends that this preacher was over there for 22 minutes. What has he got to do at her house for 22 minutes? You tell me what that preacher's up to. I know what that preacher's up to. Why, her husband left her and he just saw something right there free for him, and off he went, and blah, 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 and da, da, da. And man, word began to spread. Herman Nixon said, the next thing I know, he said, I'm having an illicit relationship with half the women in the county. Off that one visit that my wife was privy to. He said, scandalized that woman's name. Brought the ire of the church down on him. He said it was a mess to get worked out. And of course, when I said my wife was there, she can testify, oh yeah, your wife's just trying to save your neck. He said, well, if I'd done something like that, my wife wouldn't try to save my neck. She'd cut my throat. He said, you're crazy. You don't know my wife. But yet, that is how easy it can happen. So simple. So, Albert Barnes is right. From the slightest departure of purity and propriety, it could be disastrous. He goes on to say this. He was, speaking of the minister, therefore to guard his heart with more than common vigilance in such circumstances, and was to indulge in no word, look, or action that could by any possibility be construed as manifesting an improper state of feeling. Above and board question. On nothing else do the fair character and usefulness of a minister more depend than on the observance of this precept. Nowhere else does he more need the grace of the Lord Jesus and the exercise of prudence and the manifestation of incorruptible integrity than in the performance of this duty. A minister who fails here can never recover perfectly the purity and an unsullied reputation, and never in subsequent life, if he leaves the ministry, to be wholly free from suspicion. People are always going to wonder. They're always going to ask. They're always going to be curious. They're always going to say, I wonder what he's up to. He said, so it's of utmost importance that he don't depart from the efforts of purity and propriety. Boy, I think Albert Barnes hit it very well on there. He did a good job. So it falls within the duties of a minister to watch for himself among the younger and the older ladies in the congregation. A misstep here will damage the reputation of the local church, Church Universal, and forever follow me or Pastor Josh to the grave. Yeah, well, you know about that preacher, don't you? Yeah, you heard about him, don't you? Well, he's been dead 20 years, but we still talk about that incident. If you don't believe it, what do we think of when we think of Bathsheba? Do we think of a wonderful wife that took care of her son Solomon and was a great wife to David? Is that what you think of when you think of David and Bathsheba? When you think of Rahab, do you think of this hero that hid spies and served the Lord and saved her whole family and served the Lord faithfully for the rest of her life? Is that what you think of when you think of Rahab? No, because sullied things like that happen in their life are the very things that stick to us like glue. Those are the toughest things to get rid of. And young person, you are not free from getting that kind of reputation with looseness or lewdness in your life. And once you do, listen, you're marking yourself today by the things you do and say, by the people you run with, and the things that you like and dislike on Facebook. You are making the statement, this is who I am. Be careful. You're forever setting yourself up for those reputations. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Of course, keep your finger here in our text, but in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, the wisest man in the world said under inspiration. Man, I don't know how much better you can get that. You've got the smartest guy in the world and then he says something under inspiration. I mean, that's like double, Brother Josh. I mean, you know, we're just wise guys. But I mean, to have it inspired and everything. Listen to this. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 1, he says this. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. Okay, what's he talking about? Well, apothecary was a man that would have all of these nice little salves and ointments made up for various things. Eye disease, ear disease, needing your skin, something fixed on your skin. Maybe something that would smell good, an emollient that would help your skin soften. Anything that an apothecary would put together in a cream form or a liquid form, he's got that there. And it was made out of natural ingredients. There were no synthetic ingredients in the apothecary's medicine chest. Everything was natural. It was made from oils from the fruit of this. It was made from the fiber of a vegetable from this. Everything was made out of something very natural. And guess what's attracted to things like that? Flies. They love stuff like that. And so here they land in this apothecary's ointment, this doctor, this pharmacist ointment, basically what he was. And it lands in there, and it starts eating, it gets stuck in it, and it dies. And the apothecary comes by, and he puts a lid on it, not paying attention to it. And a week later, somebody comes by and needs that particular kind of ointment, and he unscrews the lid, and it's covered with mold and stinks. And, whoa, boy, this is bad. I don't know what happened. He looks down there, and a fly's in there, rotten and dead. It has ruined it, and it is nasty. Okay, that's the picture. So let me read it again. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. That's so you get the picture. Soda, a little folly, him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. So you've got a guy who is in a position that he needs a good reputation. He needs to have a good reputation for what he does. And he is supposed to be known for wisdom. And he is somebody also that is in a position that ought to be honored by other people. So you've got these three distinct things going on. He's supposed to have a good reputation. He's supposed to be the wise guy, have the wisdom that's necessary, and he's honorable. But yet we're told a little folly is just like this ruined ointment. What was originally designed to be a help to someone else now is a stinking mess. What was originally put together and formed into something that would heal, bring delight to the people around them, because of a little folly, a little foolishness, a little indiscretion, it has ruined all that he could have been. It's taken that away. So look at the verse together. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly, him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. Now ministers are depended upon for inspiration. We're supposed to be models to be imitated in purity among the members of the church. And when a pastor falls into immorality, the ripple effect on the lives of others is often immeasurable. It was adultery as one of the sins that God killed Eli's sons for. King David paid serious dues for his immorality with Bathsheba. Abraham set a world on fire with envy and trouble when he took his wife's handmaid to bed. It didn't birth until many, many years later in its full extent. Solomon, the wisest man on earth, he failed to use his wisdom in his sexual burnings. So how common is adultery among ministers? I couldn't believe this. It is reported that 30% of pastors have had an affair with a member of their congregation that they are still presently at. Music ministers have a 40% record with adulterous affairs. Please keep in mind, these are reported statistics, only the ones who've been caught. These are the reported statistics. Pastors are, in a word, sitting ducks, with accusations many times because of foolish decisions. Not protecting a relationship with clear boundaries is one of the problems. Making sure that we're not alone with other women is a problem. Don't think that, well, our pastor loves Jesus more than any man I know. He would never do something like that. Be careful. Have you forgotten that David was called a man after God's own heart? Have you forgotten that Solomon was the wisest man in the world? Have you forgotten that Samson was the strongest man on earth, and yet every one of them sinned in the area of lust? Now I want to give you some statistics that I've gathered together, and hopefully it's going to help you protect your ministers here. There's all sorts of studies that have been made to try to help ministers to discover what's called a risk factor that would increase the chance of a minister falling into adultery. Now, there is less of a chance of your home burning down, being hit by a tornado, or being broken in and you being robbed combined, than of your minister falling into sexual sin. So there's a better chance that you're going to have all that stuff happen to your house. And so you buy insurance and pay a ridiculous amount of insurance every year to keep your house from burning, to keep tornado from taking it away, and to keep a robber from coming in by getting security systems. But what do we do to protect the minister? Well, that's his problem. Really? Is it his problem? Or, ladies, should we also make it part of our problem? Men, should we also be a watch guard and a stopgap for our preachers too? It would help us. We would appreciate it. If you don't, try to put us in compromising positions, lady and fellas, if you would say, hey, be careful. I've had people come to me in the past and say, hey, the lady has a bad reputation in town. Be careful with her. I'm like, really? Yeah. I'm glad you told me that. You think, for a church member, I'm talking about somebody comes in a church, they visit the church, they come to the church and they're needing help with something. And somebody says, I know this lady and I know what's happened in the past. Be careful. We had a lady visit our church one time and I got a call from another minister who said, I want you to be careful, that lady nearly ruined my marriage. She wouldn't stop emailing me. She wouldn't stop calling me and leaving messages before the texting world. She would show up at place. She would find out where I was going to be somewhere, and she would show up there because she needed to talk to me privately. Because she made every attempt to destroy my marriage and my ministry. He said, and I honestly don't think she even realized that's what she was doing. But that's what was happening. She visited our church. Man, I was on guard. She didn't stay long. She visited a little while and she left. It's a sad situation. Well, here's some of the things that they say. This is makes your minister more at risk. Of course, foolish decisions, definitely. But if your pastor has had a family history of infidelity, if he's already been promiscuous, if he comes from a single parent home, he said, why would this matter? I don't want to share this with you. If he was physically abused as a child, what they've discovered is, for some reason, these backgrounds statistically give a higher risk factor, because if they're present in your minister, there's a chance that in his desire to help, because he himself has been hurt, he will let down guards to help somebody in similar situations. In other words, I can sympathize with you. I know exactly how you're feeling. I'm so sorry. Come cry on my shoulder. I feel your pain. It's not because there's some switch clicked off in his head and he's just, well, he's damaged goods. No, it's because many times when we pass through a hurt, we hate to see anybody else hurt like that again. I know preachers that have gone through divorces and they start divorce counseling ministries. I'm not opposed to that. I've heard where women who have been sexually abused as a child turn around and start sexually abused counseling ministries to help people. Anyway, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but oh, you've got to be more on guard. Because when you start identifying with a person's hurts and pains, do you not hurt? I do. When I find somebody sharing a similar sorrow like mine, I had a minister call me the other day and he began to tell me about a rebel daughter. And he just turned on the faith and just walked out on the faith, left him with a child to raise, and it just broke his heart. And he was like, this is very difficult for me. Immediately I began to sympathize with this guy. Like, I know how you feel, man. All those hurts and feelings begin to come to the surface. Every time one of you say, have you heard from Aaron? Man, these feelings, they come up in me. And it's just like, you know, yes, that's true. Because we're human. We feel like you feel. Exactly like you feel. So it's easier for us to say, oh man, if we've experienced similar things like that in our life. sexual molestation as a child, if they were promiscuous as teenagers. These studies say that any one or more of these can give a challenge to the minister because he's willing to be more at risk to help somebody because he knows just how bad it hurts. He knows just how deep the pain goes. We have a lady in our church that works with the deaf, and she's worked with the deaf for years and years and years. And I've never seen her more excited, fulfilled looking when she has an opportunity to sign for somebody who's hearing the gospel. It just all of a sudden it's just like she's in her niche. She's where she's supposed to be. Do you think that maybe she would have a lot more sympathy towards someone hearing impaired in a church congregation and want to rush to not only the parents of that child or the child themselves and reach out to them? I'm more intimidated to go to somebody who can't hear well because I don't know what to do to communicate to them. And I'm all, let me go find this lady in our church that can help you. But I don't know what you're trying to say to me. We all are that way when we find somebody that we relate to in some way. But there are also seasons in ministers' lives that they're more vulnerable. There are seasons. A time of loss in a preacher's life. Maybe he has a severe health problem and he's going through some suffering. Maybe the death of a loved one, spouse or child, a parent. Maybe a financial reversal. Something happens and there's a great loss of finances in their home and they are weak and become tempted in a way that they've not been tempted before. Maybe times of life transition, such as hitting that, you know, that middle age moment, or maybe moving, switching houses, a new child in the home. Maybe they've adopted a child and all of a sudden now, man, all these new challenges are upon their life. There can be vacuums in the heart of an individual during one of these times. And when someone comes alongside to comfort them, to rub their back and pull them up close to them, that man during that moment can interpret that as a sexual advance. You say, "Well, I'm just scared to even touch you then, preacher." Well, good. Don't worry about touching me. I'll tell you, the last thing you want to happen in this church is a sexual scandal. It may not be the last thing for some of you, but it is one of the things that ought to be on the top of the list. You don't want it to happen to one of your ministers. It not only puts a cloud over that minister, a cloud over the church, a cloud over Christendom as a whole, but a cloud over you for continuing to attend that church. The thing that many preachers run into, if there's any type of troubles like that, is the people they felt were closest to them abandon them for fear of association with the minister in that position. Keep those things in mind. I'm praying that you'll never have to deal with that in this church. Pastor Josh and myself have put into our ministries some safeguards that some people think are ridiculous. But we don't. I remember when our vice president was mocked beyond measure because he wouldn't travel alone with a woman without his wife there. They mocked that man and mocked that man, but there's one thing that could be said about Vice President Pence is that nobody can accuse him with witnesses that there's been anything inappropriate on an airline trip or a car trip or whatever kind of trip he may be on with another lady. Because he set a safeguard in there and he publicly stated it. can't believe that. Well, don't you wish that some of our former presidents had had such scruples that they would have been more careful with ladies and there wouldn't have been the embarrassment, the near impeachments? But preachers would be just as wise to take some of those same safeguards. We would not be foolish. Now, the high-risk behaviors are the worst of all. All these other things are interesting statistics and facts, but one of those is an opposite-sex friendship that is extremely close. A buddy, a pal of the opposite sex. Secondly is co-joint volunteering. In other words, an activity that puts the preacher and one woman alone a lot, doing things together for the ministry, for the sake of the gospel. Now, while those can't be avoided completely in the ministry, there ought to be precautions. There ought to be other individuals involved. I've worked with ladies on different projects and things, and they always bring along their kids. You know, there'll be two or three children right there in the midst of what's going on, folding papers, stuffing envelopes, doing whatever, and we're all right there together, working together. Someone said to me, "Well, preacher, with all that, you can't live like a normal human," to which I responded, "You're exactly right if that means that you let your guard down. But I don't know why a normal human would want to let their guard down. Why would you, as a layman, want to run that kind of risk? Surely you wouldn't want to run that kind of risk. But you would be equally careful." I remember working for a Fortune 500 company, and I was in a territorial management position, and they brought in a woman to work with me, and my manager told me, "Y'all are going to travel together, y'all are going to rent a hotel room here, each of you have your own hotel room, you're going to rent hotel rooms, you're going to stay there, you're going to work this particular area for 2 weeks, y'all are going to move to another area and do that, and y'all are going to travel back, you're going to report and tell us how it all went." And I said, "I can't do that." "Well, you have to, it's part of the job requirement." I said, "Well, no," I said, "I'll have to drive separately." And I said, "And I'll have to stay in another hotel." I said, "It's not going to do it." I said, "Do you know how bad that looks? Me and her in a car together, all that." He goes, "You have got to be kidding me. This is the 90s, man." I go, "Right." And the same type of things happened in the 90s that happened in the 80s, and the 70s, and the 60s, and the 50s, and the 40s, and the 30s, and I'm not going to end up a divorced man because I was alone with a funny, attractive, professional lady for hours on end, talking about our family problems, our similarities, and the things that we like, and finding out that we were really a match made in heaven. It's foolishness. It's foolishness. I've been in the ministry since 1991. I have personally counseled, wept with, traveled great distances to aid and help my friends who were in the ministry, who divorced, who've gone to prison, and many other problems because of lack of discretion with women. But we just need to get rid of women, preacher. Oh, my dear Gnostic friend, it is not the woman's the problem. It's the sin in the heart of man and his absolute foolishness. There's never a time we can let our guard down. There's never a time that you should not be praying diligently for your minister's purity. I have an elderly lady in this church that says to me probably once or twice a year, "I am praying for your protection from the strange woman." That's also saying that she'll just walk off. Now, I had another lady say to me one time, "I'm praying for you, preacher. When you first got here, you were a cute thing, and I was worried." I'm going, "Okay, what? You pray?" When I got here, I was a cute thing. And that's when she was really worried about me. Now she's not worried anymore. I don't understand that one. But I want to tell you, old and ugly alike can fall into the sin of adultery and fornication. If you think that the woman has to be some knockout, unbelievable, gorgeous woman, I have had a preacher friend leave with one of the ugliest old women I've ever seen in my life. Because, hold on, she listened to him. She listened to him. That's what he told me. She'd listen to him pray. God taught, she'd listen. She acts like she cared. Oh, we have to watch. I don't think there's any mistake in this perfect interpretation we have here, this perfect translation that says the younger as sisters with all purity. All purity. Pray for your minister. Josh and I want to finish our course. We want to finish the race and we want to win the crown. That's my goal. That's my goal. So help me. Help me with that. Pray for me. Keep me out of trouble. I'm going to do my diligence to do so. And I pray that you'll pray as well. All right, let's all stand to our feet. We're going to start on the widows and we're going to delve into them for a few weeks, it looks like. Just continues that sermon continues to expand and go into areas that I hadn't even considered as we continue to study and look at it and pray over it. It's been a blessing so far. So let's pray. Father, thank you very much.